stone on the mountain, and it's moving. It's so wind, yeah, and it's your soul, my God.
In the 60s, racism was in your face. It was violent, it was deadly. There were mass protests all across the country, all fighting for a cause. Now, over half a century later in the same city where Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated, racism has taken on a new, but just as dangerous face. And the community members are standing up once again in the face of adversity.
What's going on, Memphis? Welcome to the first episode of the 901 Rundown, a podcast from the Daily Helmsman on the campus of the University of Memphis. Every episode, we will bring you a story from our paper, letting you hear straight from our interviews and our reporters. Today, we will be taking a dive into the proposed Byhalia Connection Pipeline and its possible impacts on the 901. A couple of hundred feet below Memphis, below the concrete, soil, sand, and clay, resides a treasure that is centuries old. A treasure that is vital to our way of life, and that has been flowing into the houses of every Memphian for decades. The Memphis Sands Aquifer is protected by a layer of clay and filtered by the sand surrounding it, so it can be consumed as soon as it is pumped from the ground. And that's a source of pride among many Memphians. About 800 miles away, back in April of 2014, the city of Flint, Michigan couldn't be more different than Memphis. After changing the source of their residents' water, scientists found traces of lead in it that had leached from the pipes. Flash forward about 2 years, and Memphis is among the many who came to the rescue by sending bottles of water that we took from our own aquifer. Now, 4 years after those water bottles left the 901 on a FedEx truck, could Memphis become ground zero for the nation's next water crisis? In January of last year, Plains All American began hosting meetings in Memphis with communities that would be impacted by the proposed Byhalia pipeline, a crude oil pipeline that would traverse through Memphis. Their request for a permit to begin digging was granted in November of that year. This poses a very unique issue in Memphis because our drinking water comes almost completely from our aquifer. If the oil were to leak from the pipeline, it has the potential to contaminate Memphis's entire source of drinking water. Jim Kovarik is the executive director of Protect Our Aquifer, one of the groups that has been fighting against Plains All American regarding this pipeline. He gave me a little bit of insight into the science and threat that the aquifer is facing from this project.
It's part of what's called the Mississippi Embayment System. It's eight states. It's under eight states. We're just a small little part of it. We happen to be what the scientists that at CSER like to say, we're under the bathtub. We're under one of the deepest, most full. We have basically 57 trillion gallons of this pure water underneath us that, by the way, is aged. In fact, one of the pitches that we have is, you know, this water is pre-industrial, pre-plastic. Mm-hmm. So all of the ailments and the ills of, you know, chemicals and industry pollutants you know, all of that stuff, including plastic, it's not in our water. Okay. I mean, someday, soon, someone's going to latch onto this and realize, holy shit, this stuff's pretty good. And that's because it takes a long time for water to get down to the bottom of the bathtub to where we're actually pulling it up. So it's about 200 feet down in some places where you hit it, mostly about 300 feet, and it goes down to over 1,000 feet. So just in general, you know, 200 to about 1,000 feet is the aquifer. Now, of course, you got the ground, then you got the upper aquifer, which, by the way, is totally polluted, almost all through Shelby County. Then you have a clay layer. In most cases, you have a clay layer. And then you have the deep drinking water aquifer from where we get our water. The surface water, of course, is, you know, again, Mississippi River, Wolf River, all that kind of stuff. In many cases, it is connected to the aquifer by what are called breaches in the clay layer. In fact, they say that the streams are really good at what's called scouring. And what they do is, over time, they scour that clay layer out to where the river is really entering into feeding the upper aquifer. Mm-hmm. And the same thing, there are breaches from the upper aquifer to the lower aquifer to the drinking water aquifer. And so if there's a breach, in other words, a hole in the clay layer, well, anything that goes in the upper aquifer comes down into the lower aquifer.
Okay.
An example of that, you know, they do, one of the ways they figure this out, besides chemically, is they age date, they literally age date the water. Mm-hmm. And at the Davis well field, which is this well field that this pipeline's going through, they have already written reports about the young water in that well field. So MLG&W is pulling up drinking water that has just gone down there in the past 50 years rather than the past 500 years, which is where most of our aged water comes. That's the age of most of our water. Mm. So what we know there is that some of that upper aquifer, surface water, upper aquifer water is coming down into the aquifer there because it's young water. That's the only way it can get there is, you know, through these gaps in the clay layers.
So what is the major concern with this pipeline and what would its effect be on the aquifer?
There would be a cascade effect happening here. So let's say one of the things we're really fighting here right now about this pipeline is it crosses over this Davis well field. It goes right across it. And MLG&W has not made a determination about that. But we know, our lawyers hired a special hydrogeologist who's very reputed, very expert scientist, who said that in the case of an oil leak, it would take about 4 years for that oil to get into the MLG&W pumps. So we're not talking decades or, you know, long term. We're talking about 4 years. Now, again, there's different scientific reports on that. Some people say 10 years. Some people say 40 years. Our guy says 4 years it will be in the water. At that point, they would have to shut down the Davis well field. Mm-hmm. What is the Davis? There are 10 operating, ten operating well fields in Memphis. So 1/10 of our capacity would be immediately lost. That well field supplies all of 38109. It supplies almost all the industries on President's Island and the power, the gas plant that powers Memphis. That's just right around the corner from Boxtown, mm-hmm. the new what's called combined cycle gas plant by TVA. So all that would be, they would have to figure out how to reroute lines and God knows what, you know, infrastructure wise, what that, it would cost literally millions and billions of dollars to reroute. That's for just a simple leak, just something that would, you know, let's say, 400 gallons goes into the ground, you know?
Yeah.
If there was a calamity, a catastrophe, like a huge earthquake, and this entire pipeline, and by the way, it's not the only pipeline that transverses Memphis, there would be, you know, we could be looking at the whole devastation of the entire aquifer at that point. Mm-hmm. And by the way, again, that would affect Mississippi, would affect Arkansas, would affect other states, because we're all connected.
And their permit was cleared to begin construction. Even with the risk to the drinking water of everyone who uses this aquifer, right?
We are unique in West Tennessee that our water comes from an aquifer. The majority of laws that have been made and protections that are in place all deal with surface water. It just shows you the bias of Nashville and Knoxville and legislators that, you know, most of those laws have been made to protect surface water, not to protect aquifer water. So So they're just coming to this idea. In fact, we're now educating and preaching to people in West Tennessee and East and in Middle Tennessee and East Tennessee about the importance of our aquifer, which is very unique, and it needs protection, and your law cover it. Let's be frank here. Your laws don't cover it because you never contemplated what's happening. You know, we're the poor stepchild in the state of Tennessee. You probably know that. We're the little blue corner in a very red. All that comes to bear on the aquifer in that we don't have good, strong laws governing the management of that aquifer. Now, as a parenthesis, there are some aquifers in Middle and East Tennessee, but they're a different kind of aquifer. They're called karst, K-A-R-S-T aquifers. And these are aquifers that fill up in the day. When it rains, they fill up. Much different than our aquifer, which when it rains, it still takes 50 years for the water to get to it.
Right, right.
100, whatever. So anyway, it's just that they just have not put us on the radar of regulation in regard to our particular unique geographic feature that gives us our drinking water. In fact, we are one of the largest cities in the world that only has an aquifer for its drinking water. Many other cities might have an aquifer, but they'll have other sources like in Flint, a river or something like that. And surface water is primarily the drinking water for most of the world. So this is, it's a very unique thing to have what we have.
Looking at the damage that the aquifer could take from this pipeline isn't the only cause for concern. The pipeline will also run through the 38109 zip code, a majority black community that has been zoned as an industrial district. Justin Pearson is one of the co-founders of Memphis Community Against the Pipeline, better known as MCAP. It's a group from South Memphis that was started to oppose Plains All American on behalf of those residents.
Westwood is where my people are all from. It's where I was born. And it's a community that has a lot of value to me. And then obviously I graduated high school from Mitchell, which is only up the road from where this pipeline is going to be built. I learned from them just how important it is that we began some form of advocacy to stop this pipeline. And after listening to the speakers on October 17th, degrading this community, even as the community spoke up saying, you know what, we don't want this pipeline. We don't want this here. We know what it's going to do to property values. We know the risk of this pipeline to our water, and we don't want it. The oil company got back up and said, we're just going to have to deal with that because we're coming, whether you want us to or not. And so it has been a movement building of resistance sort of since then.
Protesting against the pipeline was initially difficult, according to Pearson. There were a number of groups who were given donations from Plains All American, which he perceives as wedges that are being used to split the community. But this has not broken the will of the residents and members of certain groups, as their movement has grown into a coalition of Memphians from across the city, not just Southwest Memphis.
Not just fighting for our people's land and our history, but we're literally fighting for our life source in our water. And this company is trying to take people's land using something called eminent domain, as though there's something for the public benefit. But to your point, there's no real public benefit here. The truth of the matter is they're throwing around $1 million in donations, 250,000 of which went to the University of Memphis. But between the million people in Mississippi and Memphis, they gave $750,000. But they know that it's an economically repressed community that needs resources, and they're using that to draw wedges between us. And we have to rise above that with a consciousness that says, nope, we care more about the water we drink and the air we breathe and the planet we leave behind than they surmise we do.
After years of industrialization in the area, the 38109 zip code experiences some of the worst rates of asthma and cancer in the city of Memphis. Drinking contaminated water could also prove deadly just take a look at Flint, Michigan, where residents experienced a number of physical ailments, but were also left with psychological trauma that they will carry for years and years to come.
So some of the after effects, obviously, we will not know for years down the line, or we'll know as we go. Some of the most immediate things that you see are you see a lot of children with behavioral issues. There are children who have cognitive and functioning issues. You have a lot of adults who had a lot of neural problems that they couldn't explain or understand, and no one knew, you know, where it was coming from or what happened. Neurologists couldn't explain it. You still have people who it runs a gamut of issues, from people who had skin rashes to they somehow developed other skin conditions that kind of looked like vitiligo, but it's not vitiligo, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. But it favors vitiligo. So there are some actual aesthetic things that you can see on people, from the rashes to the skin disorders to some other things that you can't necessarily see as far as aesthetically, but you see it in behavior or in, I know there were some people who had limbs amputated as a result of it. There were some people who suffered from Legionnaires as a result of it. Some of those people died. There are people who, it runs the gamut. Yeah. There are so many issues, both, you know, physical, mental, emotional. We can't go anywhere and feel safe drinking water out of a tap. I know that's one of the lasting psychological effects. I don't drink tap water from anywhere.
That was Candace Michaud. She's a Flint community activist and leader who fights on behalf of those affected by the water crisis.
I don't trust anybody's tap water. I remember when we went to D.C. to lobby on behalf of Flint and to get the money for the water funds for Flint. And I'm in D.C., excited, take a shower, thinking it's safe, get there the next day. We're in one of the buildings. We were going to go visit our rep, Dan Kildee, Congressman mm-hmm. Kildee. And we get into his building. I start washing my hands, and I look up, and right there, plastered on the mirror, sure enough, it said, you know, do not drink the water out of the sink or any of the faucets or any of the fountains, because they were dealing with a lead problem. So it's just like, then, you know, to dig deeper into that, D.C. has had a lead problem for years. And so it's just one of those things where it's like, well, if this is happening right in the building that they're legislating from, and nothing has changed as far as them being rushed to address infrastructure or them addressing municipal water sources and making sure that the proper chemicals are put in the water to treat water properly, then you know, who's to say this isn't happening somewhere else and these people just don't know they have lead in their water? And here I am once again exposing myself to lead contaminated water. So I just will not drink out of the tap.
For Kathy Robinson, another co-founder of MCAP, protesting and standing up for her community is nothing new. Growing up, she watched her father take on the construction of motels that would lower property values in South Memphis.
This is an area that is extremely proud. I can remember when I was a child, my dad was very active in his church, and I can remember him being active in the community as far as, I'm not sure if you know much about Memphis, but they, along 3rd Street on the way to the casino, they mm-hmm. have like all these little cheap motels, right? And before they were building these, I can remember my dad's church actually going out to get signatures to try to stop this project from happening, because you know, as I got older, I realized that, you know, as these motels grew, so would the drug rates, so mm-hmm. would prostitution rates, so would the rates of diseases. So these were the type of things that the church was trying to stop at the time. So it's always I've always seen this as an area that always tried to protect the people that live there. And of course, as history tells, the motels are there. But, you know, I always saw people fighting against those type of things. So, of course, when I heard about this, you know, I remembered those things that I saw as a child, and I wanted to fight it because of those that came before me that tried to protect the community.
When Plains All American first began holding meetings in Memphis, Robinson decided that she would attend in order to hear the company's plans to keep their community safe. As she listened, what she describes as red flags began to surface about the company and their message. So, Kathy, what did they say in these meetings that really stood out to you? You said that you had red flags from the beginning. So what were those red flags, and what was their message to you guys?
That they wanted to be good neighbors. The first thing that stands out about that is good neighbors listens to the other neighbors. In fact, there were people just saying, hey, can we get an environmental impact study? And of course, with the permit, the NPW 12, that's not required. Well, if you guys really want to be a good neighbor, why not want to know how this will impact the community in which you want to operate? They also touted the money that they were distributing to local folks, some regional folks. They were giving money to MIFA. And of course, with that money, Mike was able to distribute food to folks in Memphis, but also folks in Arkansas. They had given money to local schools. And that was just a red flag. You know, if you guys mean to do so well and folks are, you know, trying to fight this project, but you're just kind of throwing out money to get folks on your side. And what really stood out is when they gave people money, people stopped talking about it, or they didn't talk about it at all in the beginning, such as the Memphis NAACP, when they gave them $25,000, when they gave, which used to be Westwood High School, $25,000. And these folks that probably would usually be, you know, loud opponents of this, they weren't saying anything for the community. So it just kind of made you just sit back and watch and realize that these people really didn't mean this community any good.
Between Plains All Americans' donations and claims that the pipeline would be safe, there was very little to worry about at face value. However, the Houston-based company has a record of spills, and bad ones at that. In 2015, one of the company's pipes in Santa Barbara burst due to corrosion, leaking almost 3,400 barrels of crude oil, according to their estimates. This was on the edge of a National Marine Wildlife Preserve, resulting in the deaths of hundreds of birds and marine mammals, including sea lions, brown pelicans, and a dolphin. In 2018, the company was convicted of discharging crude oil into state waters, which is a felony, along with 8 misdemeanors, one of which was being slow to report the skill. According to Reuters, a jury ultimately reached a not guilty verdict for the 2 misdemeanors in relation to the death of the dolphin. Although representatives of the company claimed that this exonerated it of any knowledgeable wrongdoing, the U.S. Transportation Department found in 2016 that the company failed to have solid safety measures, planning, and judgment that worsened the disaster. This included an oversight regarding the company's failure to prevent corrosion of this pipeline. This company has had a history of spills. Why has there not been a stop to this from anywhere in our local, state, or national legislature? We have Representative Cohen, who has recently come in and said, "I don't want this here," and he's written President Biden to revoke the permit. Why have we not seen this on a local level?
I think the number one thing that we can take away from this is how important money is to our leaders that we elect. I think that, you know, what we learned through Plains All American is that they were very deliberate and very strategic about their message. Mm-hmm. They wanted to promote that their pipelines were safe. And of course, we know that this company has a strong history of spills. They just had a spill just a few years ago in California. Mm-hmm. They also touted again, mostly about the money that they would be giving to local organizations, the money that they would be paying in taxes. They try to sell the message that they will be a good neighbor, that they will be here for a long time to try to learn the concerns of the community. So when you look at that, and if you do not do any research beyond that, I think our local leaders believed, for lack of a better term, they believed the hype. Mm-hmm. But if you just do just a minuscule amount of outside research, you would see that this company has a reputation, has a history of contamination. You would see that they have a history of spills. You will even learn from the California oil spill that they were even slow to report that. You would see that these companies are full of criminals, okay? Mm-hmm. You will also see that through other pipeline projects that they've promoted to communities. Thinking of Africatown, Alabama, just a few years ago, it was the same message that they relayed to them, that they would be providing so much money through taxes. And not even, not even 10 years after that, there was pollution found in their water. So, you know, the disconnect with our leaders was just listening to what Plains was telling them and not doing any outside research. But again, Plains was very strategic. They hired one of the top PR firms in Memphis to do their work. And this was someone, this PR firm was also someone, is also owned by a lady, Deidre Malone, who used to be a politician here in Memphis. So mm-hmm. She knew a lot of people working in Memphis and Shelby County leadership. So Plains knew what they had to do to get buy-in from our leaders. I don't think what they did expect was for community members to band together like this and to form a movement. And so we're going to keep fighting because we know that this company has a history of pollution. So, yeah, I think that that was how that got lost with our leaders here. I think that they just took what Plains said. I think that they took what the PR firm that Plains hired at face value and did no research beyond that. Because what's interesting is when we speak to politicians about this leading up to the vote with the city council, and, you know, we're so adamant of why we are against it, it makes me so angry when they say, well, I need more information. Well, what more information do you need? Because the information is already out there. This company cannot be trusted, especially when we consider that they want to build over our sand aquifer. We cannot trust them.
Since referring to the community in Southwest Memphis as the path of least resistance, Plains All American has faced a significant amount of backlash. Starting from the bottom with MCAP and their rallies all the way to the city council and beyond, celebrities and political figures such as former Vice President Al Gore have been quick to respond to the issue and back the Memphis community. For more updates as this story progresses, check out the Daily Helmsman website at www.daily.com.